This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray. I'm recording this on July 23rd, exactly 1 month from the start of the college football season, week zero. We've been doing the countdown all summer long, even back in the spring. And here we are, just 1 month away from meaningful college football. Busy show ahead today here on the podcast. Earlier this week, I was down at Mandalay Bay, had the opportunity to talk to a bunch of players, bunch of coaches, folks in the media as well. And our next couple of episodes are going to have a bunch of interviews that we grabbed down there at Big Ten Media Day. I know Stormy was down there as well, grabbing some content for her show. And we did it for not only VSiN Primetime, but also for this podcast. So who will you hear from today? You'll hear from Nebraska quarterback Dylan Raiola. You'll hear from Washington head coach Jed Fish, Northwestern head coach David Braun, and Maryland head coach Mike Loxley. And we'll talk a little Terps with our guest Tyler Shoemaker, who will be first up. Always love talking to Tyler, part of the VSiN family, the T-Shoe Index. And I was actually talking about Tyler quite a bit with maybe his biggest fan, Ari Wasserman. Our guy Ari loves him some T-Shoe Index and was talking to Ari a bunch. And I actually caught up with Ari. We'll play you that interview next week on the episode there for you guys. So all those interviews coming here in just a little bit. But some pretty exciting news this week. And on Tuesday night on VSiN Primetime, we announced that we are hitting the road. And, you know, earlier in the summer, VSiN hit the road down to Omaha. What a cool trip that was for a number of our shows. Derek Stevens and company down there. We did an incredible job setting up at Rocco's, just outside Charles Schwab Field, for the College World Series. Well, we've decided to do it again, and this has been in the works for a while, and it's really exciting to tell you that we're headed to Hawaii for the Week Zero game for Hawaii and Stanford. We've been talking about this game for a while, and how about this real quickly before we get into the details of the game? So as I sit here on July 23rd, you're probably listening to this on Thursday, Hawaii is now at one shop in town, a 2.5-point favorite. That would be the Westgate Superbook. Circa flipped Hawaii to a favorite today as well. They're minus one. They're a pick'em at the South Point. Caesars has them at minus 1.5. DraftKings still holding on with Stanford as the favorite. Look, I hope it comes home. I bet over 5.5 wins, excuse me, for Hawaii. A way back, we talked about this game, said I took money line at plus 110. Matt Eumanns took Hawaii plus 2.5. We really like Hawaii in this spot, and we like them more now that we're headed out there. So here are the details. We'll be doing VSiN Primetime on Friday, August 22nd. Location still to be determined, but from the sounds of it, we will be inside the stadium there in Hawaii, hopefully having a bunch of guests come on the program. So VSiN Primetime in its normal spot, 7 to 11 p.m. Eastern time, 1 to 5 p.m. Hawaii time. We will be out there in Honolulu. And then on Saturday, we will be not in the stadium because they'll be getting ready for the game for a 1:30 kick time there on the island. We will be at TBD, but most likely a spot that if you're out and about in Honolulu, you could stop by and see me and Matt Eumanns, a special edition of VSiN's College Football Tailgate Show. That'll be airing from 1 to 4 p.m. Eastern time, 7 to 10 a.m. Hawaii time. So remember, on August 23rd, we do have Iowa State, Kansas State, and then three night games, including Stanford and Hawaii, Fresno State, Kansas, Sam Houston State, Western Kentucky. So we'll do a bit of a season preview, also preview for Hawaii, Stanford on that day. So super pumped for that. Couldn't have been done without a bunch of people and a couple of new sponsors. Our sponsor for the whole trip, for the shows, Nahaku Jewelers. So very much thankful to them and excited to be partnered up with them. And you'll hear much more about them over the next couple of months as they're going to be a part of this podcast all season long. A couple other sponsors to note. And once again, we'll give these guys their rightful due as we get closer to the game and all of the festivities for us. But Rainbow Authentics helping out NIL for the Hawaii student athletes out there. They've got some great gear. Check it out, Rainbow Authentics. And then Kahala Shirts. They're going to be setting us up with some sweet shirts when we get out to the island. But Kahala Shirts helping us out as well. And lastly, the folks at Hawaii Sports Radio, 760 AM. There are radio affiliate out there on the island, and Ku and her crew have just been unbelievable, and everyone out there. So thank you so much. So excited to get this thing going. I can't believe it's come to fruition, to be honest. It started with really a joke with me and Timmy Chang, and then here it is. We're headed out there in 1 month. So can't wait to be out there on the island. Myself, Matt Humans, we'll be doing two shows in Honolulu, getting you ready for the week zero game for Hawaii and Stanford, where now they're the favorite at most betting shops out there. So looking very much forward to heading out to Hawaii. And it was great catching up with Timmy Chang last week at Mountain West Media Day. And we heard from him on this podcast as well. Before we hit a break and welcome in Tyler Shoemaker to talk a little T-Shoe Index, just a reminder, folks, you know my go-to preview magazine right now is Pick Six Previews, the number one rated, most accurate preview magazine in America. All 68 Power Four teams, advanced stats, and detailed positional breakdowns. Hard copy magazines are shipping right now. I've got mine. And there's a digital copy as well. I've got that too. It's the magazine all the experts are using. Check it out, picksixpreviews.com. And we here at the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast, proud to be partnered up with my guy, Brett Ciancia, over at Pick Six Previews and picksixpreviews.com. So check it out when you get the chance, picksixpreviews.com. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Tyler Shoemaker will join us. We'll run through a litany of best bets from him, get an update on the T-Shoe Index. And then after that, we will hear from a bunch of folks from Big Ten Media Day. Loaded show. Please rate, review, and subscribe. Let's keep those five-star ratings rolling in, folks. They have been awesome to see. And once again, I do appreciate all of you sending the kind words to me, whether it be in a review or via social media on the episode a couple weeks ago when I talked about my beloved dog, Manti. So really appreciate all of the kind words that you guys have sent to me. All right, Tyler Shoemaker on the other side. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
And as promised, Tyler Shoemaker joins the program right now, and we are one to be one with the people. We are Total Request College Football Betting Podcast, and sometimes people leave five-star reviews, which we are always grateful for, and they give us a recommendation, and we had a request come in about a week ago. Five stars, great content. Tim is a fan like all of us. Accurate. Easy listen and great guests each episode. Thank you. How about getting T-Shoe on the show? Thanks for the great content. Well, Evanch 2000, it's like he knew our text message, Tyler, because we had already set this bad boy up before we got that five-star review. I'm excited to talk to you, brother. Always love reading your content. The T-Shoe Index is out, your college football and NFL previews, your best bets galore. Welcome back to the program, man. How are you?
Yeah, so good to be back. Yeah, it was like he was in our text messages. That's a little scary, but we were definitely going to do this regardless. This is now an annual tradition. I look forward to it. Love talking ball with you. And hopefully this season we'll actually get to do some more stuff throughout the season, which we tried like 50 times last season. And because of my schedule, we were unable to do that. But I'm going to try to get back on the show throughout the season this year.
You're a busy man, you know. You're a father, and as well as a hoop haven. So, you know, you're out there barnstorming. So that's how you make your money. Your real money is barnstorming. You're hustling local rec centers. True or false?
that's false, but we could definitely do it. I think now, though, when I walk in, I think my reputation precedes me now. I don't think I could pull off the white men can't jump bit anymore.
All right, Tyler, before we get into it, you got a lot of best bets, which I want to dive into. And I love your tissue index because you go all over the place. Obviously, it's not just Power Four teams. It's all over the map. So we'll dive into those in just a moment. But what year is this for you doing the tissue index? And how did this all come about for you putting this model together?
Yeah, it's been kind of a crazy ride. This will be the eighth year that I've done numbers. And if you could see what my sheets, you know, my Google sheet looks like now compared to in 2017, when I first started even getting the idea to make projections, it literally was pencil and paper, like just doing math on my own. Thankfully, I have evolved from there, or I would have, you know, torn all of my hair out by now. But, you know, learning some automation tips and tricks here and there. And actually this year, I was able to hire a couple assistants to help me with some of the more tedious stuff. So it is definitely, you know, continuing to grow and expand, and I'm excited for it. But it's definitely a much more advanced version of what it once was.
So I went to Big Ten Media Days on Tuesday. I'll be back there on Wednesday as we record this on Wednesday morning. And on Tuesday, there were a bunch of teams there, including Ohio State. I know a team near and dear to your heart, but also Nebraska. And that's where we're going to start, because you and I tend to align, but not all the time. And that's the beauty of betting, is having differing opinions. And I did put in a bet a couple weeks ago on the podcast over 7.5 wins. I forget the juice that I laid. I think it was like minus 105, somewhere in that ballpark. So it wasn't heavy juice, but you're on the opposite side here. So let's dive into the Cornhuskers coming off of a 6-win regular season. The narrative behind Matt Rhule is that he always takes this big jump in year number 3. When you look at what he did at Temple, what he did at Baylor, and now the thought process is, oh, he'll just do it the same here at Nebraska. They open up the season against Cincinnati, a game we'll discuss when we get into week 1 bets here in just a moment. And there are some things about the schedule that are a positive. No Ohio State, no Oregon on there. You do have to go to Penn State, where you'll be a significant underdog. You host Michigan. You have to host Iowa, which they always do. So there are potential landmines, no doubt. What ultimately led you to an under here, Tyler, on the win total for Nebraska?
Yeah, and I should preface this by saying I made this bet before I heard your podcast. I'm so behind on your episodes. So I listened to that episode 2 nights ago, and I was like, man, Tim made some really good points here. But what ultimately led me to the Nebraska under? You know, their schedule's not insanely difficult. I've got it ranked about 52nd. So, you know, kind of middle of the pack average schedule. Average opponent power rating is -0.9. So, you know, they're playing about an average team weekly. So nothing to write home about as far as the schedule overall. But when I look at the projected spreads on this schedule, you know, taking out the Houston Christian FCS game, I've got them, their average projected spread is them as a 3-point favorite. And I think we all know, you know, obviously the Scott Frost era was what it was, but even under Matt Rhule in 1-score games, they've not been great. So, you know, if you're telling me on a weekly basis, it's basically a coin flip game, history is not on Nebraska's side in those. I've got them favored in 2, 3, 4, 5 games only. So, you know, they're going to have to win all of those plus win some that I've got them as projected underdogs. So, I think the schedule is decent enough, and I don't know that they're going to be good enough. I was not really impressed with Dylan Raiola last year. I know he was a freshman, so I'm definitely allowing for the opportunity for him to grow in his second year and really prove me wrong. But everything I've seen so far, I don't know that they're going to be able to go, you know, 8-4 with this schedule. Plus the other factor, and it always should be a factor when you're making a bet, I got this at +130. So, sure, you know, I was getting plus money on this. Something I felt decent about. You know, if I had to lay even -110, maybe I don't make it. But at +130, I thought it was worth taking a bite.
Yeah, and right now I just looked at Circa plus 140. So Nebraska to the under, if you want to get some plus money. You know, that's always the interesting thing about, you know, folks like yourself and so many bettors that do models and what leads to that best bet. What do you have to have? What's your particular edge that you feel like you have to have? And it's to each their own, right? You know, people obviously make different decisions. I need this in order to make a best bet. You know, they're very by the book. Some people might change it up a little bit. Is there a rhyme or reason to what leads you to making your bets from an edge standpoint?
So that's a great question. And last year I really got into the nitty gritty weeds of calculating out, you know, the implied probabilities and the actual edge. And to be honest, I didn't find it all that useful. I think I got too ingrained in the science of it last year, not enough in the art. So this year I'm trying to kind of combine more art with the science behind it. Obviously everything I do is data driven, but I also want to have more of a feel for it as well.
Well, I want to stick with Nebraska. We're going to kind of weave all over the place here, Tyler, because you've got not only your best bets on season win totals as part of your preview, the TSHU Index. Make sure to follow Tyler there on social media at TSHU Index. But you've got week one and week zero bets. So it makes sense that you would look at Cincinnati here. And to be honest, I'll say this, as someone who likes to be more of a contrarian, likes to play a lot of underdogs, I think I might find myself on Cincinnati in this season opener at Arrowhead Stadium. I know Nebraska fans will travel in droves, but still, it's a neutral site game against Cincy. You know, our friends at the South Point, you could still get a full touchdown there. A lot of 6.5s out there. So the market is actually moving a little bit towards the Bearcats here. And that's the way you see it. So what's your projected spread on this game? And what did you ultimately bet on that Thursday night game at Arrowhead?
Yeah, I do have Nebraska as a favorite here, but only a 3.5-point favorite. So when I saw that there were 7s available, you know, I jumped on that. Obviously, you know, 6.5 makes it a little bit different if you're not getting that extra point there. So, you know, I still would play it, but I thought at 7, I really loved it. So I took Cincinnati plus 7 here in that game.
All right, let's stay in the Power 5 and let's go to the ACC. ACC media days are going on right now. And shockingly, they're not in Vegas because everything seems to happen in Vegas, which I'm not opposed against. Looking at Cal, this is a team, you look at both the California teams this year, and there's a massive questions. Obviously more with Stanford than Cal, but you know, Cal's a team that seems to be a bit in flux heading into this year. You know, you got a bunch of transfers late in the process. Jaden Ott, their running back, leaves to go to Oklahoma. They open up the season on the road in Corvallis, which I think will be a really tricky one where they're a slight underdog. So win total sits at 5.5 for the Cal Golden Bears. Look, I'm a big fan of Justin Wilcox. I think he's a very good coach, but I just think the cards are kind of stacked up against the Golden Bears here, and I think your numbers agree.
Yeah, definitely. I've got them projected at 4.9 wins this season. Their average projected spread, again, taking out the Texas Southern game, taking out that game, their average projected spread is minus 6. So I've got them as an average 6-point underdog every game this year. So to me, that really jumped off the screen to me. So I played under the 5.5.
Yeah, 5.5 right now. Yeah, sorry, just to jump in there. Looks like I'm looking at FanDuel and always look around, try to maneuver that juice. FanDuel has $1.44 to the under there on the Cal Golden Bears. I know you got it at a bit better price there at minus 130. So always look around and see where you can grab a little bit better juice. Let's stay out west and let's stay kind of on the West Coast. Washington State entering this year, their final year as an independent Pac-2, whatever they're doing. They're ultimately going to go to the Pac-12, and that's going to be a pretty wacky conference, no doubt about it. But this is a team that we've actually discussed before on the podcast and looking at their under. So if you look at Wazoo, they have a new head coach. Their previous head coach departed to go to Wake Forest. They go to Jimmy Rogers. He comes in where he was, I believe, at South Dakota State most recently. So what do you look at with this Washington State team? What do your numbers look like? I mean, one of the more wild schedules, Tyler, where they have multiple trips to the Commonwealth of Virginia. So you're going from Pullman, Washington to Charlottesville, Virginia, and Harrisonburg, Virginia late in the season. Just a wacky schedule this year for Wazoo. What do you look at with this Cougars team, who, of course, lose John Mateer, who was just a phenomenal talent a year ago as he leaves for Oklahoma?
Yeah. This is one that I really liked, and so much so that this is the most juice I laid on any play so far for this season. I laid -160 to get under 5.5 wins for them. I've only got them projected at 4.7 wins, and taking out the Idaho game, their average projected spread, I've got them as a 7.5-point underdog on average this year. So it's going to be tough sledding for the Cougs this year. I love under 5.5. Like I said, I laid -160 to get it because I believe in it that much.
So staying out in that West area, you know, we've talked about this team a bunch on the podcast. We had some comments from Hans Olsen, who is the color analyst for BYU football. We talked about it the day the news broke that Jake Retzlaff would be leaving the program. We now know he's headed to Tulane, where he's going to be a walk-on. It's going to be kind of an interesting situation down there. But, you know, the quarterback situation is not ideal for BYU, as they now will be turning to what seems to be McKay Hillstead, the Utah State transfer. Treyson Borgay was at Western Michigan. I think I might have said Central Michigan on previous podcasts, but Western Michigan. And they have the four-star freshman Bear Bachmeier, who could step in there. You know, very soft start to the schedule, where you play Portland State and Stanford, and then a weird road trip to East Carolina. When the news broke, Tyler, I immediately grabbed some under 7.5. And unfortunately, we live in the now, and it's July 23rd, and that number no longer exists. It's now 6.5. But your numbers still indicate that you would look under for the Cougs this year.
Yeah, I got under 6.5 at +115 odds on them. And I mean, to be honest, in college football, there are very few players that I would actually adjust their team's rating for them being out. You know, Retzlaff is a good player. He is not one of those players I would adjust. But obviously him leaving, actually had made this play beforehand, but I like it even more now. Him leaving, you know, really kind of puts them in a tough spot at the quarterback position, because he is a good player. I've got them projected at 6.2 wins. And again, not adjusting for him leaving, I still would have had them as a 1-point underdog on average this season. So a whole bunch of coin flip games. And without him, I feel like a lot of those are going to go against them. So I played the under 6.5.
So this is this team that your numbers have a win total on has kind of become a team we've discussed a lot here on the podcast, because I'm very fascinated by this situation that is brewing in the Sun Belt this year. So Southern Miss, and folks have heard me talk about it, they were terrible last year, 1-11, and they go out and they grab Charles Huff, the head coach of Marshall, who went out and won the conference a year ago. And they brought in a bunch of Marshall transfers. It's essentially, you know, Marshall South. And Braylon Braxton, the quarterback, the transfer from Marshall, I believe, was named preseason Sun Belt Player of the Year. So it just tells you how much is going on down there. And, you know, sometimes, Tyler, I'm a bit skeptical of the teams that kind of overhaul their roster in this day and age. But I'm not super skeptical of Southern Miss, because essentially, he coached this whole team a year ago just in Huntington, West Virginia, as opposed to Hattiesburg, Mississippi. So you've got win totals out there at 5.5 with plus money to the over. You've got win totals out there with heavy, heavy juice to over 4.5. So what do your numbers say on the Golden Eagles this year?
Yeah, this is one that I really like. I bet them over 5.5 at +125.
Nice.
You nailed it. They brought most of Marshall's team down to Mississippi. So, you know, generally, I also am weary of those teams that just kind of completely overhaul via the portal. But this is, again, a collection of guys that's played together, so they shouldn't really miss a beat from a chemistry standpoint. And Braylon Braxton is very electric. My dad's had season Marshall tickets my whole life, so I keep tabs on the herd. And I know Braylon Braxton can play. I think him in the Sun Belt is crazy. So I think they're going to have a great season. I think they're being extremely undervalued. I conservatively have them at 6.3 wins, but it won't surprise me if they win 8 or more this season. So I love this over 5.5.
It's funny. We had a a listener chime in. You could always tweet me. I'm at one Tim Murray. And he said at DraftKings, I forget the juice, but he said he made a Charles Huff parlay. So he put together over Southern Miss 4.5 wins and under 5.5 wins for Marshall and got, I think, around like plus 160 or something like that. So he called it the Charles Huff parlay. I'm like, ooh, I like that. I like that. Yeah. And we've seen this offseason under money come in on Marshall, over money come in on Southern Miss. And like I said, we're going to bounce around a little bit here with Tyler. So let's go to that week one game for Southern Miss. I forget who it was out there. It might have been Brad Crawford who jumped on the show earlier. He was tweeting about Mississippi State, and this is a team that is believed to be by far the worst team in the SEC this year, and was talking about, you know, just this game, this opener going to Hattiesburg. And I said, you better be careful, man. That is a game that you better be buttoned up. So Mississippi State, for those who do not know, goes on the road to Hattiesburg for a little in-state game there in week number one. And this has been a game, Tyler, where we've seen the betting action come in on the underdog. There were 14s out there this offseason. I unfortunately did not grab them, but 13.5s are still out there. DraftKings has a 13.5. There's a couple other shops out there. What do your numbers make Southern Miss, Mississippi State week one? And is that game you're looking to bet?
Yeah, this is one of the bigger discrepancies I've got so far early in the season. Unfortunately, I also did not get a 14, but I will still gladly take 13.5 with the Eagles because I only make this game a 4.5 point spread. So, and again, I honestly was pretty conservative with Southern Miss's numbers because they were so bad last year. You know, I didn't want to make them have a huge jump in rating, but I mean, they still had, you know, they're still going to be a lot better. And Mississippi State is a very bad Power Four team. So, you know, I'm not calling for the upset, but I wouldn't be mad at you if you sprinkled a little on the Southern Miss money line here too.
All right, let's wrap up your win totals. Once again, Tyler has all of his numbers out there, and I'm just running through his favorite plays. And I feel bad going to this one, and I know you've got Ohio in your blood, but Akron heading into this year, a 4-win team a year ago. Look, I adore Joe Moorhead. I think he's a terrific play caller. You think back to his time at Penn State, he kind of saved James Franklin. He was getting some heat there. And he comes in from Fordham, does an amazing job, eventually goes to Mississippi State, doesn't do as well, goes out to Oregon, has success. It's clear he wants to be a head coach, but unfortunately, winning at Akron is not an easy feat to do. What are we looking at with the Zips this year in year four of Joe Moorhead? And unfortunately, a year in which it feels like there's a decent amount of heat on Joe Moorhead.
Yeah, I'm not sure he's going to be at Akron after this season, which I do hate because I'm with you. I think he's done a great job pretty much everywhere he's been. You know, I was at the Ohio State-Oregon game when he was the Oregon play caller, and they diced Ohio State up in the shoe. So that was a tough memory for me. But yeah, Joe Moorhead, probably not long for Akron. I've only got them projected at 3.6 wins this year. Their average projected spread is 14.5 point underdogs on a weekly basis this year. So, I mean, they're going to be, you know, going uphill all season. It's going to be tough sledding for them. So definitely love the under 4.5 here with the Zips. I laid minus 135 on that play.
All right, Tyler, we are about a month away from week zero. We announced on VSiN Primetime Tuesday night that we are headed out to Hawaii for that season opener. Very excited to be there for Hawaii and Stanford. You've got a couple of week zero plays, and let's dive into those. And we'll start with the first game of the college football season, baby, over in Ireland, Aviva Stadium, Farmageddon, Iowa State, and Kansas State. Right now, pretty much across the board, Kansas State is laying 3. So we saw a little bit of Iowa State money come in, scooping up some of those hooks. DraftKings still has a 3.5. What do your numbers have for the college football season opener over in Dublin, Kansas State and Iowa State?
Yeah, I've actually got Kansas State minus 7 here. So I grabbed Kansas State minus 3, you know, as soon as I saw it. And like you said, you know, the market seems to maybe be going the other way on this one. So, you know, if it gets below 3, I will scoop up some 2.5 as well.
All right. This has been a game. We had Matt Grill from DraftKings Sportsbook on, I want to say 2 months ago. He's one of our first guests of the offseason. And we were going through the lines that they had put out, and he let us know because people just want to know, hey, where are the sharps betting? What's the movement been? And this might just be a situation, and you could tell me if I'm wrong, of maybe the market has gone too far. So a lot of places opened up Western Kentucky as a 7.5-point favorite. They have now moved out to a 10-point favorite at a lot of shops, including Circa and a handful of others. Has this number gone too far on the Hilltoppers as they take on a Bearcats team who's a bit in flux? They lost their coach. He went to Temple. So what are your numbers spit out for Sam Houston, Western Kentucky, week zero?
Yeah, I've only got Western Kentucky as a 5-point favorite in this game. So I grabbed 10. It looks like it may bounce back and forth here, 9.5, 10.
Sure.
Around that key number of 10. But yeah, I grabbed Sam Houston plus 10. I like that as I only project the game at 5.
All right. Another fun game as we go into week one. And we've seen some love. I want to see what this number opened at. I can't remember if it opened as high as 14. It did not, I don't think. But this is a game, believe it or not, we got it in the bowl game. And there seemed to be no love lost between East Carolina and NC State. And I know you live in South Carolina, right, Tyler?
Yep.
So I don't know if it protrudes down to you, but and East Carolina fans yell at me if I'm mischaracterizing this, but there's a little bit of a little bro syndrome with East Carolina when they have the opportunity to play the big boys, air quotes, North Carolina, North Carolina State. I don't know if North Carolina fans kind of look down their nose at Greenville, North Carolina, but an opportunity here for ECU. I always feel like ECU is up for these games, and we saw some money come into the market on ECU on this Thursday night game in week one. So what did your numbers spit out with ECU, NC State? Right now, market sits at NC State laying 12.5 against their in-state rival.
Yeah, this is another pretty big discrepancy I had. And I'm with you, though. I feel like historically ECU really gets up for these games and makes them competitive. I've found myself on the Pirates quite a bit historically, I feel like. And I'm back on them here, plus 12.5. 12.5 is kind of a dead number. I went ahead and took it, and then I'm going to see which way the market goes. It looked like maybe it was starting to trend down towards 11.5.
Yep.
So, I may grab it again at 10.5. I don't want to get it at 10, but anything above 10, I would still take. So, 12.5 is great when I only project the game at 5.
Yeah. Looking back at some history here real quickly. So these two teams played in the Military Bowl last year. NC State went off as around a touchdown favorite. ECU wins that game. They opened the season in 2022. NC State was a top 15 team. They were a 12-point favorite. They won that game by 1 point. And I'm trying to remember. I want to say, I can't remember. And they played South Carolina a couple years ago and fought pretty close in that one too. So yeah, that's a fascinating game. I'm excited to see that one on Thursday night to see ultimately who emerges in that one. Sticking with your numbers and just kind of bouncing around, staying in that region, Charlotte plays App State in a kind of a weird neutral site game. We played in Charlotte, Bank of America Stadium there, the home of the Carolina Panthers. And right now, Charlotte finds themselves around an 8.5-point dog against the boys from Boone here. New era down there at Charlotte as they bring in the Ohio coach, which I think should be a pretty big upgrade. No offense to Biff and his sleeveless shirts. But Charlotte plus 8.5. What are your numbers spit out for Charlotte App State?
Yeah, this is another game I make 5, which is weird. I feel like I've got a lot of 5-point projections here, week zero, week one. But I've got App State minus 5 here. So I did grab the 8.5 with Charlotte here. Like you said, I think they are going to have a coaching upgrade. And App State just hasn't quite been App State of old here lately. So I like Charlotte as a scrappy underdog here.
So let's go to the Saturday slate. And, I am going to talk to David Braun. I am scheduled to talk to him, the head coach of Northwestern, later today. And they've got a pretty tricky start to the season as they have to go on the road to Tulane. And they're a dog there. DraftKings has this number as high as 7. Circa has it as low as 6. So in theory, you could try to get both sides. I guess that wouldn't make a ton of sense. You had a push and whatnot. So we'll see where the market ultimately goes. But consensus number 6.5 on Tulane Northwestern. I believe this will be an 11 a.m. local kick time. And then the curiosity about what Tulane's going to do at quarterback. Are they going to give the job to Jake Retzlaff? They've got, I think, four other transfer quarterbacks down there. So John Summerall trying to figure out what that quarterback position's going to look like this year for the Green Wave. But when you look at your numbers, what jumped out to you? And is Tulane maybe not a big enough favorite at home here in this spot?
Yeah, I think Tulane is a little undervalued, or maybe Northwestern's overvalued. I'm not sure yet, but I've got Tulane minus 13 here. Like you said, they've got options at quarterback. I don't think there's a bad one for them. So I think John Summerall has proven that he's a really good coach. David Braun has done an admirable job so far at Northwestern, but I think in this game, I like Tulane getting anything under a touchdown.
So there's a bunch of other games still on your card. I want to get to the one on Sunday, and we'll do that here. But am I missing anything? So you also bet UCF over Jacksonville State, laid the chalk there, took the points with the Owls of FAU, and you're feeling it hootie in week one because you've got FAU and Rice both plus the points. Maybe a little hoot parlay for everybody out there north of two touchdowns. But off the top of your head, and I'm putting you on the spot a little bit here, was there a biggest, as they put up air quotes so no one can see, discrepancy in your numbers for week one?
I would have to get back to you on that.
Okay, I'm sorry.
I don't have that dialed up. I do have all the projections, but I'd have to sit here and do the math. I don't think anybody wants to listen to me do that.
Tyler was like, don't throw curveballs at me. And here I am throwing a curveball at him. Well, you could do it yourself, folks. You can get the T-Shoe Index. You could look at all his numbers because he puts it out there. You could check it out yourself. All right, we'll wrap on this. South Carolina, Virginia Tech. This is a team in South Carolina that obviously you living in the state and your basketball rivalry with Dabo, I just assume makes you a South Carolina fan. But they're a 9.5-point favorite, neutral site game, Mercedes-Benz Stadium on Sunday of Labor Day weekend. That'll be the lead-in to Notre Dame-Miami. So South Carolina and Virginia Tech right now, Gamecocks sit at 9.5. Really haven't seen market movement in this game one way or the other. So just kind of holding steady there at 9.5. What do you make of South Carolina, Virginia Tech in Atlanta on Sunday of Labor Day weekend?
Yeah, I took South Carolina minus 9.5 here. I'd make it 13. South Carolina, I mean, they're going to have the quarterback advantage in this game with Lenore Sellers. He's very good. Now, I saw someone put him as like first team All-American or first team All-SEC. I don't know about that, but he is
the
very,
media
very
put
good.
Him there.
yeah, he is very good. But let's pump the brakes a little bit. And then, I mean, South Carolina just in the trenches, I think, is just going to own Virginia Tech. South Carolina, that defensive line has just been so good last year in particular. So I like South Carolina in this game, anything under 10.
He's the creator of the T-Shoe Index. And how can people get a hold of the T-Shoe Index for the NFL and college football season?
Yeah, so you can go to tshoeindex.com. It's all there, very easy to get. Or you can follow me on X at tshoeindex. Send me a DM and I can help you out if you can't get the website figured out.
It's a must-have. He's partnered up with us. Excited to have him back for another year at VSiN. Excited to have you here on the podcast, man. And I'll tell Ari Wasserman that you came on the program. And just for Ari's sake, I actually I caught up with him at Big Ten Media Day. So I'm going to play that conversation after you, Tyler, because there might be no bigger fan in the media world than Ari Wasserman of Tyler Shoemaker. That dude loves you.
He does. Ari is my boy for sure. I owe him a lot. He has gotten me a lot of followers, a lot of subscribers because he shouts me out every chance he gets. So I appreciate him for sure.
Well, I appreciate you as well. Appreciate you coming on. Always love doing this. Make sure you get the T-Shoe Index. Tyler, appreciate it, man. And best of luck this year with all your bets.
For sure. Thanks, Tim.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Thanks again to Tyler Shoemaker for jumping on the podcast, giving us his best bets. Boy, a bunch of best bets. And we're going against each other on Nebraska. Don't love it, but hey, that's the way the world works. And he couldn't pass up the plus money. When we gave out Nebraska as a best bet, it was minus 115. Now you're looking at minus 140, minus 160 at Circa to the over. So I understand it and I respect Tyler. So we're going head to head there, but some really good stuff insight there, some best bets and some best bets against our guests coming up here. So we're going to wrap up the podcast. I'm going to throw to all of these interviews. Once again, thanks to Q and Steve, our boss, for helping us set up everything when we were down there earlier this week at Big Ten Media Day. We had a great time talking to as many folks as possible. It was challenging at times, but at the end of the day, a bunch of folks stopping by both to talk to me and talk to Stormy as well. And as I mentioned earlier in the podcast, she will have some interviews on money moves throughout the week. So make sure you check that out as well. But the first interview I want to throw to is Dylan Raiola. Heading into his second year as a starting quarterback in Nebraska, all the buzz a year ago. Nebraska is going to open up the season at Arrowhead Stadium, taking on Cincinnati, where they are a 6.5-point favorite in that game. There are some sevens out there, and I know Tyler Shoemaker just talked about it. Nebraska win total sitting at 7.5. When we gave out the win total a couple episodes back to the over, talked about the Matt Rhule year three effect. But we talked briefly here to Dylan Raiola, discussed his new offensive coordinator, Dana Holgorsen, and also just the feeling of winning that bowl game, their first bowl win in almost a decade there at Nebraska. So here he is, Dylan Raiola, starting quarterback of Nebraska. Dylan, last year, so much hype, expectation. You're this five-star recruit coming into Nebraska. Have things calmed down a little bit? What's this offseason been like for you heading into your sophomore year?
It's actually been the opposite. It's really probably ramped up a little bit, honestly. Flashes of winning in last year, and Nebraska excited for that. And so we just want to keep the train rolling, use the momentum that we've created and winning the bowl game, and then go shock the world.
You know, you mentioned the bowl game. It had been a while for Nebraska to get to a bowl game. You guys win that bowl game. How much do you guys take that bowl win and catapult it into this year?
Yeah, I think the feeling of seeing confetti, feeling a trophy, and celebrating with your guys after a long season, it was a good feeling. And so using that momentum to kind of, all right, this is the bar, and we want to go chase the national championship. And that's a journey we all agreed on taking. So that's what we're going to do, and that's what it's going to take.
You know, it's a unique situation where you guys have one of the best atmospheres in all of college football, but your ultimate goal is to not only win at Nebraska, but to play in the league. And to start your season at Arrowhead, and I know with your connections to Patrick Mahomes and whatnot, what's that going to be like for you to start your season not in front of your great fans at home, but in front of your fans at Arrowhead Stadium?
Yeah, I think as a kid, you growing up and you think of playing in NFL stadiums. And so we're very grateful to have an opportunity in college to play in a great NFL stadium. It's not a home game, but it's going to be a home game because Nebraska's 60,000 strong. And so I'm just ready for the season to start. I know our guys are. I love this team. I love this culture. And we're ready to take off.
Last one I wanted to ask your perspective on. Dana Holgorsen comes in late last year, takes over. Now a full offseason with Coach Holgorsen. He's the main guy. What is this offense going to look like with Coach Holgorsen as your OC?
Yeah, a lot more of it falls on the players now. Guys are required to make plays that maybe in the years past haven't been, you know, required to. And we're going to let our players go showcase what they do. You know, everyone's here for a reason. A lot's put on the quarterback's plate, which is a beautiful thing. Making sure we're in the right plays, checks, and things like that. We just have a great system around us to make us great. And so I'm excited. Coach Holgorsen's been around for 18 years plus. And, he might throw the ball a little more. We'll see.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it. Best of luck this year.
Thanks again to Dylan Raiola for giving us the time there on Monday at Media Day and giving us some insight on what he expects this year. You could sense the excitement. And I'll say this about Dylan. He was running, doing the rounds out there at Media Day. So I thought he had some insightful stuff there. Our next guest had some really great insight. And I love talking to Jed Fish. I wish we could have done it longer, but it was a busy time there at Media Day. We still got a chance to talk to him for 6 or 7 minutes. And I'll tell you what, I also talked to Damon Williams. We're not going to play you that interview. I'm excited about Damon Williams. And he had two starts a year ago, started against Oregon in the regular season finale, and then the bowl game. He was absolutely tremendous. And some of the insight you hear from Jed Fish here in just a second on Damon Williams, boy, I could just sense some really, you could sense it from him, and you'll hear in just a moment. And you think about, you know, Jaden Delora, who he coached down at Arizona, Noah Fifita as well. And now you've got this really exceptional talent in Damon Williams, who in the Sun Bowl against Louisville, 26 of 32, 374 yards through the air, 4 touchdowns and 1 interception. He completed 78% of his passes. He played in every game last year. He is not a redshirt freshman, but only had 2 starts. But he's the guy now, and he is an exceptional talent. Win total for Washington is 7.5, juice varying, plus money to the over there for Washington. And, you know, something to note here, and I would imagine that Matt Eumanns, when we do this podcast on Thursdays during the football season, will have Washington in a couple of home dog spots. They host Oregon, they host Ohio State, they host Illinois. So they get some of their most difficult competition at home this year. And Jed Fish, year two, coming off of a 6-7 year, getting to a bowl after mass exits when Kalen DeBoer left after their national runner-up season. I'm a Jed Fish believer. Year 5 as a head coach, year 2 at Washington. Here is the head coach of the Huskies, Jed Fish.
You know, coach, you always hear about the second year bump as a head coach. Entering year 2 for you at Washington, obviously you've been a head coach, tons of success at Arizona prior, but has there been a lot of differences for you from taking the job a year ago to this offseason? All right, we're calm. I know you had to make some coordinator changes. We'll get into that. But what has this offseason been like for you compared to last?
Yeah, I mean, it's been totally different in a great way. The first thing is it's been the team now knows the expectations. They know the standards. We didn't have to reinvent the wheel, show up January 18th and try to get to know how to drive to work. We didn't have to, you know, figure out where we're going to live. And that's a huge deal. I mean, we brought 21 staff members with us. And with that, that's 21 wives. That's 21 sets of kids. And for us, everybody's now settled in. That makes a huge difference for the staff. Our players, we have a lot of players that are returning. We didn't have any that we knew in the last place, or last year, I should say. So that's made a huge difference, the returning players. They understand the standard. They understand the expectation. And then I know who to talk to. I don't need to try to figure things out anymore. We have great support administratively, but last year we had an AD change 3 months into my job. So all of those things are now really put us in a great spot to move into year two.
You know, the Sun Bowl was such a fun game to watch. I know it would have been a little more fun if you ended up hoisting a trophy at the end, but I think the country really got to know who Damon Williams is and can be. And, you know, once again, it's similar in a lot of spots across the country where late in the season, whoa, this guy, this is the future here. What has, similar question, what has this offseason been like for Damon? And look, you know, there's a lot of hype around him, you know, thinking maybe he's a top 10 quarterback in the country. What can Damon Williams be?
Well, I mean, we saw a little bit of Damon at the end of last year. I mean, Damon was still 18 years old last year. It's not, there was no redshirt freshman year. You know, Damon was, he turned 19 in March of this year. So the way he ended, being 26 for 32, 4 touchdowns, throwing 1 touchdown run and going for 2 at the end, you know, fingertip away from a great ending, but it made him hungrier. It made him want it more. It made him come back and talk about the first drive of the game where we threw a pick. He only threw 1 interception last year. 8 touchdowns, 1 interception off of 105 pass attempts.
78% completion percentage, you know, no big deal.
Yeah, pretty good.
Not bad.
So, but he came back hungrier. He wanted to know more. He wanted to work harder. He wanted to now, it's his team. Mm-hmm. You know, he didn't always have that, you know, you're the backup the first 10 weeks of the season. Yeah. So it's going to be a big year for him. We start against Colorado State at home and looking forward to that, and then letting see how good he can become.
You know, you've had great success with quarterbacks. Obviously, people remember the success you had with Noah Fifita down at Arizona, but even, you know, in your previous stops as an assistant. What is unique about Damon, and what is the country going to learn? If they didn't tune into CBS on New Year's Eve and see that game, that Sun Bowl against Louisville, what is the country going to learn about Damon Williams?
Yeah, you know, in our year two at Arizona, we had Jaden Delora and wound up being top five in the country in passing. And then year three, we went from Jaden to Noah and stayed in that same area, I think sixth or fifth in passing and scoring. And when you get into that world, like, Damon has similar traits of both those guys. His ability to make people miss reminded me a lot of Jaden. His ability to make plays with his feet reminded me of Jaden. His accuracy, his ability to throw the football from all the different platforms reminded me of Noah. His ability to be that special athlete reminds me about no one. He is elite at being able to run and catch. He's and throw, I should say. He's elite in terms of his ability to process football very quickly. So it's a pleasure to coach him. I'm excited to see what he can do, what type of step he can make. There's a lot more that he can get better at, and that's our goal.
Defensively, you bring in Ryan Walters, and you know, I know the Purdue head coaching run was not what he was hoping for, but he is, and I think I'm quoting you, an elite defensive mind. So when you had an opportunity to make that change when Belichick goes and follows his father, why did Ryan Walters ultimately be your decision to lead your defense?
Yeah, it was an easy decision for me. It was probably a little harder for him based on the other options he had. Luckily, his parents live in Seattle. But, you know, you look at what Ryan did at Illinois, first and foremost, and you take a defense that was 97th in the country in scoring, became first. You take a defense that was 107th in total defense the year before he got there, became second. So you've got five different categories. He was in the top five the last time he was a defensive coordinator. Then people that have gone through being a head coach gives you so much more perspective. I looked at who made the playoffs, and all four of those teams had another head coach on the staff, and that's why it was so important to have Ryan.
Last one for me. Husky Stadium, for years, before you were there, before Coach DeBoer was there, even before Coach Peterson was there, it's always hard to play at Husky Stadium. Why is Husky Stadium so challenging for the opposition?
Maybe they just get caught up in how beautiful it is. Maybe they just walk out there and they're like, wow, look at the mountains that are snow-capped, and look at the lake, and then they just let plays happen. I don't know. Our crowd is amazing.
Yeah.
The energy around it, the way they built the stadium, there is a cool, crisp air. You know, hopefully we get some rain every now and then when the southern schools come up.
Sure.
But I think for the most part, it's just everybody loves football in Seattle. We sell out. It's loud. It's fun. It's awe-inspiring. And I think it's one of the best places, if not the best place in the country to play.
Coach, thanks so much.
Thank you.
You can sense it. Damon Williams, I tell you what, man, that's a guy that – I put in my preseason top 10 quarterbacks coming back this year, and I think he has a chance to be a special, special player. Excited to see that week one showdown against Colorado State for Washington. That's going to be a late night game. Not the latest game on the board, but still a pretty late night game there for Washington. Actually, 11 p.m. Eastern kick, so it actually will be the latest game on the board, that in Utah-UCLA. So you'll get to see what Damon Williams is all about. They're a 19.5-point favorite in that game, are the Washington Huskies. Well, a win total of 7.5 for Washington and a win total of 4 or 3.5 for our next guest, which is David Braun, the head coach of Northwestern. What a unique situation he was thrust into just a couple years ago. Pat Fitzgerald was fired, and David Braun was brought in to be the defensive coordinator for that Northwestern program, coming in from the FCS ranks in North Dakota State. And then he was given the interim tag. They removed the interim tag late in the regular season. They went out and won their bowl game. And actually, that's how I started my conversation with Coach Braun, because I was a sideline reporter on the national radio call of Northwestern's win over Utah in the Vegas Bowl 2 years ago. Stormy was the television sideline reporter, so he had the VSiN power there on the sidelines at the Vegas Bowl just a couple years ago when Northwestern won that game over Utah. But last year was a challenge. They go just 4-8, win two games in conference. And this year, what do we expect from the Northwestern Wildcats? I will say they bring in Preston Stone, and they've had, it's felt like for years, just injury after injury at the quarterback position. And you're going to hear what jumped out to David Braun and the coaching staff about Preston Stone when he went into the portal. So we'll see what the Purple Cats have in store. Challenging game out of the chute where they go on the road to Tulane, where they are a touchdown underdog against the Tulane Green Wave in that opener. Actually, a little bit under a touchdown, 6.5 now is the number. So a little bit of Purple Cat love coming in for that noon Eastern kick to start off the season. But head coach of David Braun, year 3, as the head coach of the Purple Cats, win total sitting at 3.5 at some shops. Here he is, the head coach of Northwestern.
Coach, we were just reminiscing about, I don't know if it was the last time you were in Vegas. You might have been here recruiting, doing some other things. But, you know, this program has some good memories here in Vegas. I was fortunate enough to be on the sidelines doing your game, and you guys beat Utah, and just what was a war. It was it was a fun game to be a part of just from a broadcast standpoint. So taking us back to the end of the 2023 season, a year that was just kind of bizarre in a lot of ways, to cap off that year, what are your memories about that Vegas Bowl?
There's a lot of them, you know, and even just you sharing that picture with me, I mean, memories just came flooding back. But, you know, what a first-class operation, you know, being a part of the Las Vegas Bowl. Incredible game, incredible opponent against Utah. And, you know, ultimately, like, my biggest takeaway from that entire week, for our team to be able to cap off the 2023 season with a bowl championship here in Las Vegas, it was truly an opportunity for that group of guys to write their story and leave a legacy, and they certainly did that.
You know, I'm sure it feels like a million years ago because so much has happened, but can you take us back to 2023? Because you get this opportunity to be a P4 coordinator, and then everything unfolds that happens with Coach Fitzgerald. You get thrust into this role. And to be honest, the punditry, I probably at one point said, like, Northwestern's not going to do anything this year. Yeah. And you guys go out and win 8 games. How much did you learn just about yourself in 2023 that you can carry over to 2025?
Yeah. Ultimately, you know, We have an opportunity to shift our perspective, right? Like, in tough times, it's either happening to us or it's happening for us. It was an opportunity for us to circle up, invest our time and energy in the right things, and that was our players. Coming off a tough 2024 season, a frustrating year, opportunity for us to evaluate everything that we're doing, changing landscape of college football, and really do a great job of identifying how we're going to move forward in this landscape while still staying true to Northwestern values, but finding ways to win a ton of games in the Big Ten. It's been an incredible challenge post-2024. Really excited about where this team is at, but ultimately so confident in the fact that we have a staff and a group of people that are solutions-based and understand that, you know, tough times don't last, but tough people do. And we got a program right now full of really tough people that have been operating with humility and a lot of hunger as we approach the 2025 season.
You know, what does a season like last year kind of do for you? What does it do for this program? I talked to Coach Loxley yesterday, similar situation, 4 wins a year ago. Obviously not where you guys want to be and not where you have been. This program has been a bowl team for many, many years. So what did you learn, Coach, about yourself? What did you learn about this program, and what can you take from a 4-8 season to spin it to this season?
Yeah, you know, ultimately, you know, learn that, you know, we got to continue to evolve as a program while we stay true to who we are. You know, there were some things personnel wise that, you know, we went out and addressed in the transfer portal. It was a great opportunity for me to sit down in January with a group of leaders on our team and really have open dialogue about, guys, how are we moving forward? And ultimately right now, we have a team that is, as coaches, we're guiding our group, but it is a player-led team, a group that said, you know, we're back to make sure that 2024 never happens again. And, you know, I think in terms of things I've learned about myself, I think I've learned that, you know, this head coaching role in the new landscape is something that I never could have, you know, wrapped my arms around two years ago. I'm adaptable. I'm solutions based. I think I do a great job of surrounding myself with great people, and really excited about the work that this team's put in since January.
So you mentioned, you know, going to the portal and getting some of those pieces. One of those pieces, Preston Stone.
Yeah.
What jumped out to you and your staff about Preston Stone, a guy that was a massive recruit at SMU? I know for him last year, I'm sure he was a bit frustrated that, you know, Kevin Jennings ultimately took that job over. But for you, when you went and evaluated the quarterbacks that were available, what jumped out to you about Preston Stone to lead your program?
You know, it's really unique. We were preparing for Duke last season. Duke's offensive coordinator had come through from SMU. So we were watching a bunch of 2023 SMU Preston Stone film in the prep for Duke. And never imagined that Preston was going to be in the transfer portal. But the second that he went in, it was absolutely convicted as a program. This is a guy that we have to go get. And then as we built a relationship and not started to understand who Preston is as a man, who he is as a competitor, you know, the chip that he has on his shoulder a little bit in terms of, you know, proving himself right, that he is a high-level quarterback, it shows. I mean, what he did in 2023 in his time and opportunities in 2024 and what he's shown in spring, he processes at a high level, accurate, and most importantly, a great leader. Our guys on the team, he was around for 2 weeks and was elected to our leadership council.
Wow.
I mean, that's the type of leader and competitor that he is.
You know, he talked about Coach Lujan, and that was a really unique hire that you made a year ago. And I imagine because of your ties to the FCS, being at North Dakota State, he being at South Dakota State, you know, it was this kind of boy genius thought, hey, he's coming in. So now year two, right? You always hear about the year two jump for coaches, not only head coaches, but maybe coordinators as well. What has this offseason been like, and what should we expect from a Coach Lujan offense this year?
Yeah, I think you're going to see creativity. I think you're going to see ways to find opportunities to differentiate ourselves and really stress our opponent. And ultimately, I think you're going to see an offense that's just operating at a much higher level in just all the little things.
Yeah.
It's a second year for our guys. There's a level of consistency for Coach Lujan and the offensive staff. There's an understanding, you know, a full understanding of our personnel, their strengths, and maybe some of their limitations, putting those guys in great positions. And ultimately, just really excited about the competitive depth that exists in our offensive line group right now. In the Big Ten, you got to win at the line of scrimmage, and the group that we have coming back in that O-line group and the additions that we've brought in, you know, we should have an opportunity to do that this fall.
You know, there's so much made about non-conference schedules,
yep.
And you guys, boy, I know it was scheduled probably a while ago, but it doesn't get easy.
Yeah.
You know, it's a G5 program, but maybe the premier G5
yeah.
program, them and Boise. So to open up at Tulane, what kind of – this isn't a soft launch, right? This is right out of the gates. Here we go, a team
yeah.
that they want to get to the playoff this
yep.
year as well. So what has this, you know, build-up been like? I know you're not in camp yet, but to open up the season against a team like Tulane, does that ratchet things up a little bit more for you guys?
You know, absolutely. Incredible opportunity, huge challenge, especially on the road. You know, bring on the competition. John does an incredible job.
Yeah.
They're well coached. They're physical. They're sound. You know, and they're playing at home. And you know, our team wouldn't want it any other way. It's a great opportunity for us to make sure that we're, you know, clicking on all cylinders throughout fall camp and for the beginning of the season.
Last one for me. I know you guys will be excited to get back into your renovated home, but you got some pretty cool spots you get to play some home games. Is there a better and more picturesque field in college football than where you play your home games?
No, there's not. It's the most unique venue in all of college football.
How's that wind? That wind is whipping off of the Chicago area.
It's a real deal. I mean, our Duke game last year, the wind was certainly a factor. And it's something for us that we've just made a decision that we're going to be outside as much as we possibly can be. You know, even in weeks where we may not be expecting some inclement weather, you know, if it's Tuesday and the weather, you know, the wind's rough, we're going to get outside. We're going to make sure that, you know, we're preparing ourselves for the elements that are going to show up.
Now, do you think it would be a good omen for you guys if the Cubs won the World Series this year since you're playing a couple games in Wrigley?
Absolutely. Let's go. Let's go.
Coach, appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah, two games this year, as you heard him right there, and as I joked, two games this year for Northwestern at Wrigley Field against Michigan and Minnesota. They had that unique playing surface, and you might remember the wind whipping in that Duke game back in September of last year, and I can't recall right off the top of my head, but I think that was a pretty brutal beat to the under, to the over, I should say, in that game, because that was a double overtime situation there where they lost that game, Northwestern did, and if people remind me of that game a little bit, because I remember it being kind of wacky, and the wind was really whipping there off of Lake Michigan for the Purple Cats against Duke. Last but not least, the head coach of Maryland, Mike Locksley. And, you know, he made some waves this week talking about the accountability that he's going to have at walking into the locker room. He said you could leave your Louis belts, your car keys, and your financial statements outside. He also talked at his press conference before I chatted with him about how he lost the locker room. And this is what he said. He said, Coach Locks lost his locker room. We had haves and have-nots for the first time. The landscape of college football taught me a valuable lesson. If I had to put my desk in the locker room, I will. So we will see what that means for Maryland. I will say this about the Terps this year. This is a team that very much kind of won the schedule lottery. They do not have to play Penn State. They do not have to play Ohio State. They do not have to play Oregon. The three best teams in the conference, Maryland avoids all of them. They get Washington at home off of a bye week. We just heard from Jed Fish. I'm excited about Washington, but I think a scheduling spot that is rather challenging for Washington will be the travel from Washington to Maryland. And as Paul Stone pointed out on the VSiN Weekend Morning Line a couple weeks ago, and I reiterated those numbers here on the podcast, teams traveling across two or three time zones in the Big Ten last year went 4-16-1 ATS, as long as it wasn't a massive point spread. I think the number Paul mentioned was 20 points or more. So tricky spot for Washington heading to Maryland there. They get Nebraska at home, a team that I'm high on. Tyler Shoemaker, not so much. They get Indiana at home. Kirk Cignetti, he made some waves, as he probably always will, at Big Ten Media Day, but Indiana heads to Maryland with Penn State waiting on deck. Is it a look-ahead spot potentially for Indiana when they go to College Park? And then you get Rutgers on the road, which is always a toss-up type of game. But Coach Locksley entering year number 7 as the head coach. A lot of curiosity at the quarterback position as well, and we'll talk about that here in just a moment. Win total for the Terps this year sitting at 4.5, plus 110 to the over. Here is the head coach of Maryland, Mike Locksley.
Coach, as you head into this year, I was listening to your press conference. What's the vibe going into this year? I know last year wasn't what you were hoping for with a 4-8 season. So have you changed things up? What's kind of the feel of this program in your 7th year as the head coach?
Lucky 7 in Vegas. How about that, man? I look up and it's 7 years in. But, I mean, yeah, we talked enough of what last year was about for me, the part I played in it, owning that new landscape. I didn't navigate it very well a year ago. The good part is with the way revenue shared, knowing that July 1st was coming, that it would at least give me a chance to take care of the players in my program without me having to figure out how to get and raise the money. I can tell you that we were a talented team a year ago that just didn't play together. Mm-hmm. And I've spent most of my time trying to figure out how to get us to play together. We're not there yet. That's what training camp's all about, much like our counterparts up at the NFL level. Sure. Where they've got 6 weeks to create a team, create a culture that allows players to play for something bigger than themselves. That's kind of where we are. And, you know, I'm embracing the fact that we're young and new, because the great part about that is that they don't know what they don't know. We're just young and dumb enough to go out and play really well against teams, because we're not – worried about things maybe happened in the past or past experiences. We got a lot of new players, and that's with youth and with newness comes that unknown, and I like working from that area.
You know, you've always been known every stop of the way as a great recruiter, and a lot of it starts at the quarterback position. To go out to get someone in your backyard, look, I'm from the DMV. We know how talented, rich that area is, and to get a guy like Malik Washington to come to Maryland, to stay home, what have you seen from him so far, and what do you expect from him as a freshman? Is he going to be competing for that starting job right out of the gate?
You know, the thing I like to say about Malik is that if anybody is built for being able to compete for a job as a freshman, you know, I have some experience from the Jalen Hurts as a freshman, to a Tagovailoa as a freshman, to even the way Mac Jones navigated his path or his journey during my time there. I've played freshman quarterbacks a lot. Malik has all the DNA and the makeup that you would want. You know, he's one of those guys that the players gravitate to him. But we also have guys like Justin Martin, who we've invested in, and a guy that has some game experience. And the one that kind of let the cat out the bag is Christian Martin, who I've been really pleased with Christian. His preparation as a young player a year ago, seeing the fruits of it throughout spring and then even in the spring game, the way he performed. We've got a quarterback room that I think we can win and have the ability to win with all three. And what we have to do on the offensive side of the ball is figure out which one gives us the best chance to win.
You bring in Pep Hamilton as your offensive coordinator. There's been a lot of excitement, I think, around him, around yourself as well. So what are we looking at here for offense?
Yeah, you know what? Pep is probably one of my closest friends in this business. I've known Pep since he was a player at Howard University, and I can remember in 1997 and 98 when he was a young OC and him coming over working to Maryland football camps, and that's where we started our relationship. But his ability to navigate the Big Ten, you know, his ability, and then adding Ted Monachino and his experience as a NFL guy, they've made that transition of how we have to prepare our team now compared to, you know, I grew up in the Nick Saban system where you developed your younger players by how you practiced and by forcing them onto the field 15, 20 plays a game. Well, this NFL model that we're kind of moving towards where, you know, 60% of my team has never played a down for me, I've got to figure out how to get them ready to play now. And that's where, you know, Pep's experience and Ted's experience in the NFL lend themselves to be able to set schedules and to put structure into how we develop our team and how we do it fast.
What can, under you, seventh year there, you've been there for, I would say, what, collectively over a decade?
17 seasons.
So what can Maryland football be? You know, no one knows Maryland football better than you know Maryland football. What can Maryland football be?
You know, with the investment that I expect in my new boss, Jim Smith, who a guy that understands the business of sport, with the investment that I anticipate us working together to figure out if we can control the DMV area, which we've done to a degree in terms of some of the top players, keeping them home. If we can keep the players that we're able to recruit and develop on our team and not have them jump ship and go to other places, the sky's the limit, because we've done something that hadn't happened in 130 years where went to three straight bowls, won all three, and then a year ago, as I like to say, again, it was an anomaly year that we have a strong foundation, but we have to navigate this new landscape, and I have a lot more confidence in myself as well as the locker room to understand where we are, and I'm excited about this team, and it's mostly because it's the unknown, and I like kind of that.
Now, last one for me. I think your fit's looking pretty good.
I don't know, man. Some people thought I was with the Olympic Committee
something. But Buzz Williams brings some. He got a three-piece suit. Like, do you have to step up your game now?
You know, we got different styles. Buzz and I are, you know, he's more corporate. I'm more kind of corporate casual. You know, I'm a renegade guy with the bright colors and stuff. But, no, I've learned a lot from Buzz in a short period of time. He's become a fast friend and really excited about having him there. He and I are very similar in philosophies. He's probably more of a football coach than a basketball coach.
He's fiery.
When you watch the way he develops his team and how he goes about it. I mean,
you look at some of those Texas A&M teams, Coach. I think you could have had a couple couple of those power forwards playing linebacker for you.
You know what? I'm going to be scouting his team, man. I'll be stealing a few of his power forwards to come over to our place and rush the pass or play tight end.
Appreciate it, Coach.
Thank you.
And thanks again to Mike Locksley. Thanks to all of the coaches and players, Dylan Raiola. We also heard from Jed Fish, the head coach of Washington, David Braun, head coach of Northwestern, and Mike Locksley right there, the head coach of Maryland. Thanks to all of the sports information directors, PR people that really helped us out there out at Big Ten Media Day with all of the sound we were able to gather. Handful of players as well. We put a punch on our social media page at VSIN Live, so check that out. It was a lot of fun to go down to Big Ten Media Day. I caught up with a bunch of media members and chatted with a bunch of them, sat down and recorded interviews with two of them, and you'll hear those next week. Ian Fitzsimmons of ESPN was awesome. We talked for a really long time. I'm a big Ian Fitzsimmons fan and never met him in person, and we chatted it up for a couple of days down there at the Mandalay Bay, and we sat down and had a fun conversation for about a half hour. So you'll hear that next week. Also, an update from Ari Wasserman. Ari Wasserman was one of our first guests this offseason from On3 Sports, and we had Ari on just for a little bit, and we'll do that next week as well. But yeah, a lot of fun out there at Big Ten Media Day, and hope you enjoyed those conversations. Not sure if they swayed you one way or the other on a win total, but we are a pro Dylan Raiola podcast here this year with our over 7.5 ticket in pocket. Haven't gotten there on the Terps yet, but tell you what, man, Washington, that is a team that very much intrigues me on what they could be this year. And once again, talking to Jed Fish, hearing him talk about his players, you look at that schedule, they should start 2-0 with Colorado State and UC Davis bye week before the Apple Cup. Then you get Ohio State, maybe a spot where they're a feisty dog. I don't know if they can win that game outright. They go to Maryland, which will be a challenge, host Rutgers, at Michigan, home to Illinois. Illinois will be coming off a bye when they come out to Washington on October 25th. They're at Wisconsin, which is a big one for our win total under 5.5. They do get Purdue, which is helpful, and they get it at home at UCLA in Oregon to wrap it up. So 7.5, probably right, but I think the upside there could be there for Washington, and very excited about what Damon Williams, what Jonah Coleman could bring from an offensive standpoint. All right, that's going to do it for the podcast. Thanks again to everybody who helped us out this week. Thanks to Ryan Hunter, our producer, who I have put to work here on this podcast with a bunch of different interviews we are throwing his way. So always appreciate Ryan's help. Thanks to all of you as well. Hopefully you've enjoyed a little bit of a different episode this week as we're throwing to a bunch of interviews from Big Ten Media Day. But Tyler Shoemaker, always appreciate his insight. Make sure you give him a DM if you want to get your fingertips on the T-Shoe Index. But that's going to do it for our episode. Hope everyone has a great weekend. As always, you could tweet me. I'm at @1TimMurray. Give us a 5-star review. Hit that follow button on iTunes. Really helps things out. And as I always say, I know it's that time of year where everyone's out at the beach on vacation. If you run into a random stranger, why not tell them about the VSIN College Football Betting Podcast? I think that would be a good conversation starter. All right, that's going to do it. We'll be back early next week with a couple of interviews from Big Ten Media Day, as well as we'll catch up with handicapper Kyle Hunter next week as well. This has been the VSIN College Football Betting Podcast.